It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Guy Raz. And our show today, To Endure, ideas about resilience and survival. Now, imagine for a moment being 24 and living a relatively anonymous life, and then overnight being forced to endure the unwanted and very negative attention of the entire world. Do you imagine a time in your life where you won't have to talk about painful moments in your past?
That would be nice.
This is Monica Lewinsky.
You know, I don't know. I think, especially in the last couple years, my experiences are very much a part of who I am and part of the process that I had to go through to be where I am today was really about recognizing that I couldn't run away from what happened.
And what happened is a well-known story. Monica, of course, was the White House intern who had an affair with President Bill Clinton in the mid-1990s. All the details of that affair were made public as part of a wider investigation into Clinton's business dealings. And the details were so public that Monica became the object of international ridicule and humiliation. But what most of us do not know is how she dealt with it.
I could not move forward in my life. So I couldn't get a job. I even sometimes had trouble volunteering places. And that was a very challenging time for me. And I didn't have direction and I didn't have a sense of purpose. It's very hard to be grounded in who you are when you feel you don't have a purpose.
Do you have a hard time trusting people or are you careful about that?
You know, Guy, it's interesting. One of the things which I guess I consider a big blessing in my life is that I am still able to have close, meaningful, intimate, authentic relationships with people. And at the core of all of that is trust. But if my, you know, trust spidey senses get tickled, I go from 0 to 100 quite quickly in terms of distrust.
Most of us hadn't heard Monica's actual voice in many years until she gave her TED Talk in 2015. Now, for a number of reasons, she's been reluctant to give interviews. She doesn't want to relive the trauma or recount the details of what happened. And what Monica Lewinsky really wants is for others who've suffered pain and humiliation to know that they can endure, that they can survive traumatic experiences. Here's Monica Lewinsky on the TED stage.
At the age of 22, I fell in love with my boss. And at the age of 24, I learned the devastating consequences. Not a day goes by that I'm not reminded of my mistake, and I regret that mistake deeply. In 1998, after having been swept up into an improbable romance, I was then swept up into the eye of a political, legal, and media maelstrom like we had never seen before. It was the first time the traditional news was usurped by the internet for a major news story. A click that reverberated around the world. What that meant for me personally was that overnight, I went from being a completely private figure to a publicly humiliated one worldwide. This rush to judgment enabled by technology led to mobs of virtual stone throwers. Granted, it was before social media, but people could still comment online, email stories, and of course, email cruel jokes. Now, I admit I made mistakes. But the attention and judgment that I received, not the story, but that I personally received, was unprecedented. I was branded as a tramp, tart, slut, whore, bimbo, and of course, that woman. I was seen by many, but actually known by few.
Do you think that there is something about shame that is particularly traumatic and difficult to endure.
Yes. Shame, particularly on the scale of which I experienced it, it's like a heavy blanket, a heavy suffocating blanket. You feel very alone, very isolated. And I guess the image that comes up for me is covered in tar, that the stigma is thick and intense. Yeah, I think it's very hard to be in your own skin when you're suffering from the effects of shame.
Were there moments where you didn't think you would make it?
Many, many moments.
Hmm.
Where I just thought it was too much. It was just too much. And I couldn't imagine seeing a light at the end of any tunnel.
Let me paint a picture for you. It is September of 1998. I'm sitting in a windowless office room inside the office of the Independent Council, underneath humming fluorescent lights. I'm listening to the sound of my voice. My voice on surreptitiously taped phone calls that a supposed friend had made the year before. Scared and mortified, I listen. Listen as I confess my love for the president and, of course, my heartbreak. Listen to my sometimes catty, sometimes churlish, sometimes silly self being cruel, unforgiving, uncouth. Listen deeply, deeply ashamed to the worst version of myself, a self I don't even recognize. A few days later, the Star Report is released to Congress, and all of those tapes and transcripts, those stolen words, form a part of it. That people can read the transcripts is horrific enough. But a few weeks later, the audio tapes are aired on TV and significant portions made available online. The public humiliation was excruciating. Life was almost unbearable.
How did you persevere through that time? How did you actually go through that on a day-to-day basis? And that pressure and that judgment and the suffering.
There was a lot of suffering. There was definitely a bit of denial. You know, your first reaction to being kind of torn apart on a public stage is anger and frustration. But it slowly gave way to doubt about myself, about my own experiences, what I knew to be true. And it was because I had the love and support of my family and my friends and professionals that I think I was able to make it through.
The landscape has sadly become much more populated with instances like mine. And now, the consequences for some have become dire. Very dire. I was on the phone with my mom in September of 2010, and we were talking about the news of a young college freshman from Rutgers University named Tyler Clementi. Sweet, sensitive, creative Tyler was secretly webcammed by his roommate while being intimate with another man. When the online world learned of this incident, the ridicule and cyberbullying ignited. A few days later, Tyler jumped from the George Washington Bridge to his death. He was 18. My mom was beside herself about what happened to Tyler and his family, and she was gutted with pain in a way that I just couldn't quite understand. And then eventually I realized she was reliving 1998, reliving a time when she sat by my bed every night. Reliving a time when she made me shower with the bathroom door open. And reliving a time when both of my parents feared that I would be humiliated to death, literally.
Obviously, you talk about your mom being outside your bathroom door. And as a parent, that is particularly hard to hear because you can just imagine how painful that was for your mom to see her daughter contemplate something like that.
Right. I think for both of my parents, there was a pervasive river of fear that ran through every moment of every hour of every day of that year. I think it was not anything they were prepared for. I think any parent is prepared for. But I know that in today's world, you know, especially with how rampant cyberbullying has become, that there are a lot of parents who are suffering from that fear for their children.
Do you try to forget that period of time in your life?
I think the hope for me and what has worked so far is having more and more other experiences which are different that sort of diminish the impact of those past experiences. Just the other day, actually, was an anniversary for me and my family, which started out 18 years ago as the anniversary of the worst day of my life, which was when the FBI sting happened and I learned about the investigation. And that was a traumatic experience for all of us. And a few years into sort of that, it's 1:04 p.m., here's where I was, this was what was happening, this is what I was feeling, I, you know, along with my family, decided that I wanted to reframe it. And so I realized that that day was actually, rather than a marker of being the worst day of my life, was a marker of the day that I survived. And so that's the day that I and my family, we use, and we call it Survivor's Day. Wow. And it is. And then that's my moment of acknowledgement each year of I've survived something.
I've seen some very dark days in my life. It was the compassion and empathy from my family, friends, professionals, and sometimes even strangers that saved me. Even empathy from one person can make a difference. I'd like to end on a personal note. In the past 9 months, the question I've been asked the most is why? Why now? Why was I sticking my head above the parapet? You can read between the lines in those questions, and the answer has nothing to do with politics. The top note answer was and is because it's time. Time to stop tiptoeing around my past, time to stop living a life of opprobrium, and time to take back my narrative. It's also not just about saving myself. Anyone who is suffering from shame and public humiliation needs to know one thing. You can survive it. I know it's hard. It may not be painless, quick, or easy, but you can insist on a different ending to your story. Have compassion for yourself. We all deserve compassion. And to live both online and off in a more compassionate world. Thank you for listening.
Could you have imagined then, when you were going through this, that because of what you endured and what you went through and then ultimately what you survived, you would be able to use that to help other people?
I think I hoped it. And I think one of the things that we can really kind of think about as a society is to really rethink how we evaluate resilience. And emotional resilience is something which we can build, and particularly in younger generations. You know, resilience is not something that we should just cross our fingers and hope we have. If, you know, when the, I don't know if I can swear, hits the fan. But, you know, resilience really is a muscle that we can build.
Is trauma and is enduring trauma something that happens and then ends, or is it something that comes and goes?
Trauma is something, for me, I guess the goal of trauma is to make the echo of it quieter. So if you sort of think about when trauma is really active, it's like a hummingbird. But the goal is to kind of have it be a little more like a condor. And to manage trauma, you have to be pretty vigilant.
Still today, to this
day? Oh, sure. Sure. You know, many times when we hear people's stories, we hear of this horrific incident, and then, ta-da, they're all better, and their life is rosy. And the reality is that it ebbs and flows so much that you think you've turned a corner, and then, surprise, you haven't. You realize there's a whole other mountain to climb.
If you and I were talking about you, and it wasn't you, we're talking about you, and we were just chatting, and I asked you, I would say, do you think that you could withstand that? What would you answer? Because I would think
hell
that,
no.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think if someone had described the experiences which I ultimately went through, I would have assumed that I would have been out the first day.
That you would not be able to survive it.
No.
Or handle
no.
it. Because most of us, I think, would think that.
Right. But I think the thing that's the most important thing that I've learned is that we are all so much stronger and so much more resilient than we can ever imagine. I think it's so important for people to understand that. It doesn't matter what your experience is of struggle or level of trauma. We are more resilient. We have a well of compassion for others and ourselves, which can help us bounce back from any kind of situation.
Monica Lewinsky. She's now working on a number of anti-bullying projects, including an emoji keyboard app called Be Strong. 7 million people have now watched Monica's TED Talk. You can see it as well at TED.com. Keep pushing. I can't stop now. Move up a little higher. Some way or somehow. 'Cause I've got my strength. And it don't make sense not to keep on pushing. Hey, thanks for listening to our show this week on endurance. If you want to find out more about who is on it, go to ted.npr.org. Our production staff at NPR includes Jeff Rogers, Brent Bachman, Megan Kane, Neva Grant, Sanaz Meshkinpour, and Casey Herman, with help from Daniel Shukin. Our intern is Maria Paz Gutierrez. Our partners at TED are Chris Anderson, Darren Triff, and Janet Lee. If you want to let us know what you think about the show, you can write us at tedradiohour@npr.org. And you can follow us on Twitter. It's at TED Radio Hour. I'm Guy Raz, and you've been listening to Ideas Worth Spreading right here on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.